Welcome to the ABN AMRO first quarter results conference call hosted by Kees van Dijkhuizen, who is the CFO, and the CRO, Victor Reinhorn. All parties are on a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to the CFO, Mr. Kees. You may begin.
Thank you very much, operator. I'd like to welcome you all to this analyst call of ABN AMRO first quarter results. As said, Victor Reinhorn and myself will share our views on these results, and thereafter we'll open the call for Q&A. We will use a short presentation published on our website this morning, and a full version of this presentation will be published later today. If I start with slide two on the quarterly highlights, then the positive development of the last quarter has continued. The underlying result for the first quarter was good, with 543 million profit, 44% higher compared to the underlying result of the same period last year. We are very pleased with this result. Q1 benefited mainly from higher operating income across all line items and a sharp decline in impairments, and Victor will give more color on that. In general, we benefited from the improved economic climate in the Netherlands. Private consumption exports continue to improve, also more houses were sold. Number of bankruptcies continue to drop and consumer confidence improved significantly. Consumer confidence actually is positive in territory for the first time actually since 2007. And the favorable stock markets also added to our results. Then if I turn to slide 3 on the CI target, cost income target, you see that for the first quarter, the cost income ratio came to 56%, an improvement from 58% last year. In the second half of the year, we expect regulatory charges of around 250 million, being the banking tax, the European Resolution Fund, and the European Deposit Guarantee Scheme. And if we include these expected regulatory costs evenly over the quarters, CI ratio would be at 59. That is already within our target range of 56 to 60 in 2017. If we go to the ROE target, slide 4, we see an ROE improvement from 11 to 14% same quarter last year. And again, including evenly spread out expected regulatory costs for the year, ROE would be around 12.5%. Which is even a bit above the top end of our target range 2017 of 9 to 12. Then if we go to capital, slide 5, fully loaded, CET1 ratio improved to 14.2%, which is clearly above our target range of 11.5-12.5. A year ago, our fully loaded CET1 ratio was 12.9. We prefer to have a cushion for possible upcoming regulations on especially risk weighting and for being able also, of course, to pay dividend. Victor will elaborate a bit more on this risk weighting topic. Our fully loaded total capital ratio at the end of Q1 was 19.5, and I would also like to draw your attention to slide 18 of this presentation, which shows our existing total capital position in relation to TLAC. Fully loaded leverage ratio, 3.5, that's under CDR rules, which apply since 2015, and that's 0.3 higher than the 3.2 a year ago, based on the same definition. If we go to slide 7, on interest income and volumes, you see that net interest income rose by 8% versus the first quarter of 2014. NII benefited from continued improvement in lending margins, and this is observed across all business lines. NII in Q4 last year was above average due to several one-offs. The NIM came down from the exceptional high level of 163 in Q4 to 148 in Q1, like Q1 2014. The decrease is mainly caused by NII one-offs in Q4 and the balance sheet increase of around 50 billion in the first quarter. Half the increase the balance sheet is accounted for by securities finance, by the way. Clients build up their position in the first quarter, The remainder is, amongst other results, from FX effects, interest rate movements, and also high cash position. Margins for new mortgages, as well as margins on mortgage resets, continue to outpace the average margin of the mortgage book. For corporate loans, besides small margin increase, the average outstanding loan volume increased as well. And if we go to slide 8 on fees and other income, you can see that fee income was 11% higher than Q1 last year. The rise was driven in private banking by favorable stock market performance, as mentioned, as well as by higher fees in corporate finance and clearing. Large transactions this quarter, on which we advised on, included the IPOs of Grand Vision and Refresco. Then if we go to expenses, slide 9, they were up 7% compared to the first quarter of last year. Personal expenses were up 9%, partly due to higher pension costs, around 25 million, following the low interest rates. And there's a reorganization cost of around 19 million at corporate banking, which also resulted to extra expenses. Rise in other expenses mainly concern IT investments and internal optimization projects. If we go to slide 10, loan impairments, you can see that they totaled 252 million, 30% lower than the first quarter of last year, and Wietse will shed more light on this. And if we go to the segment results, the good performance of retail banking in the first quarter is mainly the result of lower loan impairments. Mortgage margins improved. NII grew by 3% compared to last year. Operating expenses remained virtually flat. The result of private banking improved by 70% in the first quarter, mainly from higher operating income on the back of improved stock market conditions and the inclusion of the German private banking activities as of September 14. Impairment charges also came down. Client assets by private banking grew by 10%, strong increase in net new assets of 3.7 billion, of which 1.5 billion is from our retail bank. The strong increase is the highest level in years. Corporate banking operating income improved in all categories, especially benefited from increased corporate finance and clearing fees. Personal expenses were impacted by a restructuring provision, and as already mentioned, impairment charges were up as well, predominantly due to one single large addition, while the trend continues to decline. And Wietse will now elaborate on risk and loan portfolio development.
Thank you, Kees. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good morning. As already mentioned, the economic climate continues to have a positive effect on our results, and in general, impairment levels further declined. Let's go back for a while to slide 10, impairments. As said, the impairment charges totaled 252 million, 30% lower than Q1 last year. And the improving housing market in the Netherlands reduced both the inflow into the impaired portfolio, as well resulted in more outflow. The cost of risk for mortgages over outstanding loans declined to only 2 basis points on an annualized basis. This is the lowest since the new ABN AMRO was established in 2010. Impairments were down for all subsegments except for commercial clients. Loan impairments in commercial clients, those are the clients with revenues up to 250 million, they peaked in 2013 and have gradually declined since then. Unfortunately, we experienced in this quarter a single large addition, which was masking this trend of decline. The Q1 commercial loan impairments were high in particularly the sector healthcare. The improvements in the Dutch housing market are reflected in our mortgage book. The positive sentiment in the Dutch housing market is a result of low interest rates, low housing prices, combined with a better economic climate and consumer confidence. The number of houses sold was up 19% year on year, while housing prices increased by 2.4%. Our mortgage production in Q1 increased by 25% compared to the same period last year. Our market share was 20%, second position in the market. Contractual repayments are gradually growing, reflecting the charge in the Dutch fiscal mortgage regime. Extra repayments are still elevated. The average loan-to-market value in the mortgage book continues to improve. The risk weighting of mortgages is currently 14.4%, representing 22 billion of risk exposure amounts, risk-weighted assets. You are aware of the recent BIS consultation papers. They're under discussion. But if, for example, an additional Basel regulation would require a floor of 25%, this would increase risk exposure amount to approximately 40 billion, decreasing our core equity tier 1 ratio by approximately 2%. So you can see why we keep capital well above the target range we set ourselves. Loans to small enterprises, part of the segment's commercial clients, show a slow increase in the number of applications compared to Q4. The level of acceptance has already been higher for the last three quarters. Few words about the ECT portfolio. It grew by 15% to 25 billion, supported by the strong US dollar. 450 million euro of that was organic and mainly realized in the transportation sector. The growth was partly offset by lower volumes in financing commodities because of the low commodities prices, especially in oil-related financing activities. On the other side of the balance sheet, clients continue to entrust more savings to us, resulting in a loan-to-deposit of 112%. Deposit volumes rose across almost all businesses, but especially for corporate clients. If we move to slide 12, a couple of remarks about risk ratios. The impaired ratio continues to show slight improvements in residential mortgages and commercial loans. Besides improved economic conditions, this decrease is the result of continued active management of the portfolio, such as strict monitoring and a balanced portfolio intake. The impairment ratio, as you can see, for commercial loans is negatively affected by the already mentioned a single large file. Still, the trend for commercial loans is positive. The impaired ratio for consumer loans remained flat. In absolute terms, the level of impaired customer loans declined by 48 million compared to Q4. Total coverage ratio remained in the mid-50s. A couple words on slide 13, mortgages. This slide clearly shows the improving trend observed in the Dutch housing market. As mentioned before, the Dutch housing market continued to improve. Past due and impaired mortgage exposures trend down. The annualized impairments came to 2 basis points this quarter. We have not seen these levels since the start of the new bank in 2010. The average loan-to-market value of the portfolio improved slightly to 82%, benefiting from redemptions and housing price increases. The average loan-to-market value, excluding the NHG-guaranteed mortgages, continued to improve to 78%. The mortgage book consists of around a quarter of NHG-guaranteed mortgages. Approximately 45% of the new production is NHG-guaranteed. The portion of mortgage loans with loan-to-market values above 110% continued to decline, also because there is no more inflow in the highest bucket as a consequence of new mortgage regulation. Well, this brings our short presentation to an end. Operator, can we please open the call for questions?
Absolutely. Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Be sure to unmute your line and record your name clearly when prompted. Due to potential time constraints, please limit your questions to 3. If you would like to ask additional questions, you may press star 1 to rejoin the queue. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And one moment while I gather that first name for you. All right. Thank you. And our first question comes from Cor Klaus. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, Cor Klaus, Rabobank. But a few questions. First of all, more qualitative on private banking. As the interest rates are now currently quite low, do you see a change in customer behavior, that they are interested more in structured products? One of your Belgium colleagues is quite successful in selling structured products with guarantees to their clients to get extra commission income because the interest income is somewhat difficult. Do you see that, or do you have plans to sell those products more actively to your clients, especially in private banking? That's my first question. Second question is on savings accounts. I think you pay now 90 basis points on your savings accounts in the Netherlands. You cut it, I thought, the 30th of April. Do you think that further reductions on your savings account can be expected this year? One of your Dutch colleague banks was quite vocal on that, that they would expect to do that during the rest of the year. That's my second question. And my last question is about private banking net inflow. You had a very nice, good net inflow in the private bank of 3.7 billion euros. You mentioned 1.2 billion is from the retail bank. My question is, what is the other 2.2 billion coming from? Which part is coming from the commercial bank and which part is coming from external clients? That were my questions.
Thank you very much. With respect to the private banking, your first question, we are not working on structured products in this field. So that's not not an area where we are developing new activities, actually. With respect to savings accounts, indeed savings rates are still high in the Netherlands. I think there are on average perhaps two times as high as in the rest of Europe. That's, of course, related to funding gap discussions and the likes. We normally don't give a reaction on lowering rates, but you can see that there is a big gap indeed between the level of 90 bips and the minus 20, which is the ECB deposit rate. So indeed, I think that a direction, a lowering of that rate is clearly a possibility during the rest of the year. And the third question, Peter?
Yeah, that was the net asset inflow in private banking. Actually, 1.2 is from retail, which is actually evidencing our feeder model we have in the Netherlands, that we feed up from retail to private banking clients, but also assets. The remaining part, 2.2, is mainly external. A very small part is corporate, but it's mainly external, new clients, new assets being brought into the bank.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from David Locke. Your line is now open.
Hi, everyone. Yes, three questions for me, please. First one's on income going forward. I know you had quite a high, strong fee income result, and another one of your Benelux peers had a strong result there as well. Just wondered how we should think about this commission kind of fee income going forward. Is this a seasonally high level, or do you think this is a new sustainable level that you can kind of build from going forward? And also, does that help offset some of the AFS gains, which will presumably go away over time? I note there was some ALM income that was quite strong in the first quarter. Second question, just on the risk weighting. Thanks for giving the clarity around how much that would be on your risk weighted assets. I just wondered if this was affecting how you're thinking about pricing and lending on mortgages at the moment. I mean, clearly, an increase in risk weight from 14 to 25 is pretty big and would affect the ROE that you would make on that business. So I'm just wondering how you are approaching pricing and lending given the kind of uncertainty we have around risk weighting for mortgages. And then the final one, which is probably connected with that, just the loan growth. I know mortgages wasn't particularly strong, but there was an increase of about 2%, I think, in commercial loans in the first quarter. I just wondered how we should expect that to go going forward, because clearly that was quite a strong start to the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. First question related to fees. Indeed, there is a clear increase there from the 420 a year ago to 470, and the fourth quarter was 430. However, we think a level we see in the first quarter, there are not a lot of special effects there, to be honest. So I think that might be a level which we can continue going forward. Richard, risk weighting and loan growth?
Yeah, sure. As to risk weight, thanks for the question. Important question. Of course, we are thinking this through, but at this moment, there are no increased risk weights. So So currently the pricing of our mortgage book is risk-based on the basis of current risk weights and current models. I think that's important. And as soon as there is more information about new risk weights, we will probably amend our policies there, but currently we're not doing that. Your question as to loan growth, you may have seen that if you look to the books right now, a mortgage has, the book has been stable, consumer book has been stable, there has been growth in the commercial loan book, but primarily it has been in the ECT business and the clearing business. In the commercial bank in the Netherlands, we have not seen loan growth. So in the SME part and corporate banking part, we have not seen loan growth. You may expect that if the economy continues to recover, we may see loan growth there. So in the Dutch economy, we may see loan growth there. As to ECT, my point would be that if you currently see what is happening there, due to low, as you know, we are quite a substantial player in the commodities financing markets. Commodity prices have come down, so the loan growth has been aligned with that, so lower utilization of loans, i.e. if the prices of commodities remains pretty at the same level or even lower, then of course you may expect that not the loan growth from that perspective will be very large. Having said that, still, of course, we're in the business of acquiring new clients, and they could add a certain loan growth there. So, in summary, I think we are somewhat positive about future loan growth.
Thank you. Can I just have a quick follow-up on the risk weighting one, which is just that, I mean, I take it that you're not basing your pricing on at the moment with what are very speculative increases in risk weights, but given the kind of commentary in the press that's been around the IPO and the timing of that, and you know, clearly the impact that this would have on your business model, probably more than many other banks in Europe. Are you hoping to get more clarity from the regulator later this year, or is this something that really is completely out of your control and the Dutch national regulator's control? Thank you.
Yeah, the interesting part of your question is that this is kind of a second question about the timing of the IPO. We cannot give any comment on that. So whether that will be end of this year or next year, that's up to the Ministry of Finance. So apart from that, your question was, would we like to have clarity on the BIS proposals? Yes, of course. I mean, whether that is the coming half year or next year, of course it's important, because this is and this has an impact on a number of banks, but also banks in the Netherlands who have quite substantial retail portfolios, low risk weighted at present, and it's not only us, but also our peer banks in the Netherlands.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Guillaume Tiberghien. Your line is now open.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to ask on regulatory RWA inflation. So clearly, mortgage seems to be the biggest hurdle for you. Are there any other areas, whether it's exposures to large corporates or banks or any other thing on market risk or operational risk, where you think potential new regulation could impact you negatively? Thank you.
As to operational risk, I'm not aware of the fact that there should be a anticipated change as a result of new regulation, as we're pretty much into the advanced AMA environment there at this moment. So that will be my answer to the lecture. And the first question probably was on the other part, other than mortgages. In the commercial loan book, and we already have actually quite higher risk weights, it's fair to say that the Basel papers do also give reason for higher risk weights in the, for example, the SME books. But again, we don't know, and we have to await what is the outcome there.
I'd like one thing to add, also related to the question before. Of course, if you would make a calculation on, there was also a question on ROE. If you would make a calculation on ROE, for instance, of our retail business, and well, it depends on how you do it. But say you take you take a 12% of risk-weighted assets or something like that. Huh? Our target, our CET1 target on risk-weighted assets for that business line.
you of course will see a high ROE in this business line. And when risk weights increase there, that means that ROE goes down in that business line, but it does not mean that because the equity of the bank doesn't change, and if the profit doesn't change, the ROE of the bank in total does not change. So I think that is something to take into account as well. But of course, for the business line itself, if you make calculations on how profitable is a business line and you take as a proxy the risk-weighted assets, then of course they go down. But as you will make the calculation, you will see that is high at the moment, so that there is room there. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lee Street. Your line is now open.
Hello and good afternoon. Thank you very much for the call. And thank you for slide 18. I have a couple of questions there. So you referred to 1.5% of additional TLAC. Is that debt that you need to issue, or are you just taking into account your existing senior debt for that? Secondly, you referenced a management buffer within your assumed TLAC requirements. Are you able to give any commentary on what size you think that might be? And finally, is it your expectation that the Dutch government will follow the German government's example and look at changing the subordination of senior debt as you know, from where you sit at the moment? Is that something you think is under consideration or likely? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Indeed, this is a new slide for us. With respect to do we need senior, which is, by the way, related actually the first question to, I think, your third question. As you can see in this slide, that what we actually need on top of what we have is not much, so we do not absolutely need senior, presumably. That is what you can take from this slide. That does not mean that we have taken the decision yet. So with respect to the German proposal, I think we'll wait discussions in Europe on this. What will happen with perhaps all the senior, like the proposal in Germany, or perhaps your contractual kind of development of new tier 3 paper, which will be contractual, bail-inable, unsecured. I think we'll wait for discussions in Europe, how they develop before we take a final position on that. Management buffer is actually put here as a kind of a proxy. We do not. It was just illustrative that we might take on top of all the regulation a buffer. We have not decided yet. Depends very much on the state where regulation is. For instance, today we have a large buffer, as already mentioned by Wietse, of 2% because of insecurities in the Basel regulation. If there's, of course, much more certainty on everything, buffers can be lower. So that is not yet, that's more for illustrative purposes here in this slide. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your answers.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Edouard Kilou. Your line is now open.
Yes, hi. Three questions from my part. My first question was, would you have any updates regarding your AT1 issuance plan? Second question is, could you communicate about your SRP requirements? And third question, if you are able to communicate on it, would you expect SRP requirements to count toward potential MDA restrictions? Thank you.
I missed the third one, sorry.
The third one is, would you expect the SRP requirements to potentially affect MDA restrictions in case of buffer breach?
Okay, thank you. AT1, the tax issue is solved, already launched by other banks in the climate at this moment in time, of course, interesting. We do not upfront say anything on that, so I'm afraid I have to say that if we would go to the market, you will hear it at that moment in time. Sorry for that. And with respect to SREP, I think we don't disclose, we're not allowed to disclose. I think the questions you raised, regulatory agreements with regulatory authorities, Pillar 2 and the likes.
That's correct.
And on the MDA, I think you can see that we have sufficient room to maneuver. So also, if SREP, for whatever reason, would, let's say, spoil the party, if I may say so, then from an MDA perspective, I don't foresee any problems at all, bearing in mind the buffers we have.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this was Erik Bosman's our treasurer.
Sorry.
No problem.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Anke Reine. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just had a follow-up question on the risk weightings. And just to make sure I understand correctly, the 25%, is that applying on average on your residential mortgage book, or you're basically saying it's a minimum risk weighting, so a floor of 25%? And then I was wondering how you came up with the 25%. And then lastly, as a follow-up question to an earlier question, when do you think you will have clarity on the risk weightings? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I was talking actually not about average, but I was talking about a floor, and I call it actually the Swedish floor. We take it as an example. So it's a floor on risk weighting being put by the BIS actually then on the whole portfolio. Again, this is not yet happening, but it may be in consequence. We don't know. And, yeah, when do we know? We don't know. Yeah, it's a very unsatisfying answer to you, I think, also to us, because those papers are still in consultation, and you may imagine and can imagine a lot of discussion is taking place there right now.
Yeah, and if Basel has taken a decision, that's also perhaps something to add, and that will, I don't expect that to happen actually before the end of the year, perhaps next year. Then it goes to Brussels, and then in Brussels they have to take decision if it's applicable to European countries. So clarity on this will definitely not be there, I think, before next year somewhere.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Benoit Petrac. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. Now, just to come back, sorry, on the risk-weighted assets. I mean, your CET1 ratio is now above 14%. How much buffer do you keep for this type of uncertainty on risk-weighted assets? Is that 2 percentage points, like you mentioned, on the floor? Just wanted to try to understand what is your current base case in terms of risk-weighted inflation, and therefore how much buffer you need to keep on the CET1 ratio. That's the first question. Second is on cost of risk, clearly very low on the retail side and the private bank. Still high on the commercial clients, 194 bps, I think. You know, what do you expect there for the coming quarter? I think you also mentioned a single addition. That would be nice to get a figure. And what could be the kind of cross-the-cycle average for commercial clients in terms of cost of risk? And then final will be on the mortgage pricing. You know, clearly, you know, since 2008, I think we've peaked at about 30 bps cost of risk on mortgages, Dutch mortgages. We are now at 2 bps. Is that an indication that you know, pricing and ultimately margins on mortgages will just fall sharply and potentially be back to the long-term average? Thanks very much.
To start with your first question, thank you very much. How large is the buffer? We don't have a certain exact buffer for that at the moment because, as already said, we do not know where these proposals will lead to. And it was just for illustrative purposes that we mentioned the 25 Swedish floor, what the effect would be, just to give you an idea that it is, of course, a serious thing. If you look at our Core Tier 1, of course, and you know that our policy on dividends actually is around 40% in normal situations. Last year it was 35% and the year before 30% we paid. Then you will see, of course, with the ROE we make today, that, of course, with a dividend of, say, 40% this year, possibly, that would lead actually to an extra, of course, accumulation of capital and increase of Core Tier 1. So the buffer we have, although we do not have a concrete definition for exactly how much we want to have for this risk weights,
might increase going forward. Risk.
Shall I answer that question? As to commercial clients, Q1 cost of risk was 180 basis points, correct there. I explained important in this quarter was a large single addition. We never disclose things around clients. Specifically, what I can disclose, what do we call here large, it's a bucket between 50 and 100 million of an impairment taken. So if you take that out of the equation, then clearly the trend, which we have been showing already, will continue. That is also the view we have going forward. Where that will lead to in terms of through the cycle type of cost of risk for commercial bank, I'm not able at this moment to disclose, but I can say actually that for the bank as a whole, we have not been given any guidance there, but if you would ask me what is an estimate there, I said again, for the bank as a whole, probably that would be somewhere around 30-35 basis points. Your question as to currently the cost of risk in the mortgage book is 2 basis points, which has come down substantially from the cost of risk last year. It's correct. I thought your question was, are you lowering prices or whatever? We base our pricing, actually, on a number of things, risk weights, certainly, but the models also in terms of through the cycle view. And so it means that we are not, on this basis, lowering prices on mortgages.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Jean-Pierre Lambert. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions. The first one is on the leverage ratio, which is at 3.5, and we can see a cyclical pattern of securities finance. Is there a constraint you see coming up, or is it a kind of activity you would like to rein in if the leverage ratio requirements move to 4%? And maybe some indication on profitability of that activity in proportion. The second question is more clarification. The regulatory cost, 250 million. Can you provide a split of the components and maybe indicate which quarter you expect this to move in? Thank you.
Thank you. Leverage ratio, indeed, we increased from 3.2 to 3.5 in the last 12 months. So that's quarter one. We actually do not see a problem with the 4% going forward. We think we can manage that. We have always been in favor, of course, of a European approach and not a Dutch only in the Netherlands. But we think and we hear from other regulators that the 4%, I think it should be Brussels. They all think in that direction, so we take that into account, of course, that this might happen, will happen going forward, but we can cope with that. Also with our securities finance business, where we feel comfortable with, also with profitability, actually, it is cyclical, that's true, but we feel comfortable, actually, with the business as it is. With respect to the 250 split, 100 roughly, 100 banking tax, I think in Q4, roughly a bit above 100, resolution fund. I think October or something like that, also Q4, I think. And then the deposit guarantee is split over two quarters, and that's around 30, 40 million. Presumably, we don't know yet, of course, it's 0.5 or 0.8 or something in between. And that then. In Q3 and Q4.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Albert Blahey. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, all. A few questions from my end. To come back to the risk weight discussion. I had basically two questions on that still. One is on the retail mortgage side. I think there's also some discussion if a floor would be imposed, whether that would be done on, let's say, a group level on the mortgage book, or maybe even on an individual loan basis. And I understand if the latter would be done, it would be even more punitive, so to speak. Maybe you can give some color on that. And second, is there also any impact potentially the way the commercial loan book, how the risk weights are applied there, or that you might even have some, a lower weighting potentially? The second question I had was also a little bit on the leverage ratio and in relation to the securities financing part of the business. Clearly, Q1, I think, is always a seasonally strong quarter, and that's also visible in the balance sheet over the first quarter. How do you look at the leverage ratio in relation to this specific business? Do you believe maybe some exemption can be made or maybe an adjusted leverage ratio from a regulatory point of view? Or, so basically, is there any impact on this line of business due to the leverage ratio discussions? And finally, I had a question on the ETC business, especially on the off-balance sheet one, which is pretty short-term, clearly more function also where oil prices are. I did notice there was a slightly down the balance, but not that dramatic. How do you would qualify the outlook for this business given where oil prices are, and what kind of impact on revenues you see from this? Thank you.
With respect to risk weight, indeed, you just mentioned one element: is it group level or individual level? But there are also discussions: is the floor taken into account in the standardized approach, or is it a check which is taken separate from the calculation in the risk in the capital ratio? So there are a lot of things indeed to be discussed going forward. So this is one we don't know. That's all still open at the moment. With respect to commercial loan book, lower risk weights, we do not expect. I think also there we see that if you look at the proposals, risk weights would go up, not only in the Netherlands but also in Europe. So that also that is still not clear yet, but it will certainly not be a lowering what we expect. Leverage ratio, securities finance, I think indeed cyclical in the sense that at the end of the year at least, books are, sometimes half of during the year. We know that's always the case. And that means indeed if you aim for instance, a leverage ratio of 4, that you should have a higher ratio at the end of the year. And that's what you also see now. Last year we were at 3.7 at the end of last year and at 3.5 at the moment. So indeed, if you want to end up during the year above 4, at the end of the year, if you have a serious securities finance business like we have, you need a bit higher than the 4 at the end of the year. We do not think that adjustments for leverage finance is something which will be taken into account by regulators, actually. ECT.
Shall I answer that question, Kees? I think your question was as to the off balance there. Actually, the off balance sheet commitments, it's more or less short term, it's letter of credits, etc. They increased considerably over the last years. End of Q1, 12.2 billion. We have also uncommitted commodity trade finance, which is also being recognized there as off-balance sheet, for a total of 25 billion. Also increased considerably. Your question was, what does it mean going forward in terms also of volume? I think I answered also an earlier question in that sense that if, for example, the current lower prices would be on at current levels or even lower, with constant demand, actually means for us a lower financing requirement, which could limit our loan book growth, but also therewith the off-balance sheet items, the letters of credits issued, etc., or the uncommitted trade lines. However, we expect to continue to grow our share of wallet with existing and new clients, which may offset part of the lower lending requirements. But as said again, this is also depending on how the commodity prices will go forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And our next question comes from Matthew Clark. Your line is now open. Mr. Clark, your phone may be on mute.
Hi, good afternoon. Sorry about that. Just a question on volume growth. Aside from the volatility around the commodities financing business, what's your appetite for growing volume, and I guess what's your ability to grow volume? Similar sort of low or flattish development that we've seen for recent years, or would you expect a more material pickup going forward? Any thoughts there appreciated. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the question. We do anticipate growth in the Netherlands, actually, in terms of loan book growth. There you have seen, of course, over the last years there has been a decline. Will it be a very large growth? No, that's not what we think, actually. So it will be a small to somewhat medium-small growth. And as I said again, depending also on where the commodity prices are going to, it could also mean long growth in the ECT business. But on balance, it is growth, but not on a very large scale.
And in terms of the domestic growth, is there any prospect of pickup in the mortgage business, or is it really going to be driven by a recovery in the commercial as the economy recovers?
We don't expect a large growth there. As you may know, that also as a result of changes in the regime, what you do see there is still voluntary repayment and contractual repayment going on, actually, at this moment. So the new production actually is offsetting more or less what is being repaid. So we don't expect a lot of growth there.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I'm showing no additional questions at this time.
Still no further questions, operator, also?
Yep, I'm still showing no questions in queue at this time.
Okay, then I would like to thank you, operator, first of all, and all of you participating in this call, and thank you for your questions. I think we'd like to conclude that we are very pleased, as said, with the Q1 results, as said, the highest result in the last 4 years. Still early in the year, of course, but we also saw that we also already clearly met our strategic ambitions for 2017. We are aware of the high Core Tier 1, but as discussed during the call, the risk weights and so on, we feel comfortable with that higher level as a cushion for upcoming changes. So thank you very much again, and hope to speak to you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. This now concludes today's conference. All parties may disconnect at this time. Speakers may hold for post-conference.